It's Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, if the Brewers Stadium can be called Miller Park, what should it be named? We'll hear a case for honoring arguably the greatest player to wear a Milwaukee uniform.
First, Wisconsin's employment indicators are pretty strong. The unemployment rate is near an all-time low of 2.9%, and the labor participation rate is just over 68%. Those are both better than the national figures.
But a number of factors can hinder participation in the workforce, including things like training or education mismatches, health limitations, and a lack of transportation. A new report details how access to affordable, reliable, high-quality child care can affect labor participation, especially among women.
In addition to workers and employers, the report also lays out the benefits of good child care options to children and communities. And it describes how various local entities in Wisconsin are working together to find solutions to improve child care.
Tessa Conroy is an economic development specialist and an assistant professor at UW-Madison and Extension. She's the author of the new Windicators report, Child Care as an Economic Development Strategy. Tessa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, can we start to quantify how big a role childcare plays when we look at Wisconsin's workforce?
I think we can start to quantify it. When we look at labor force participation, particularly among women of prime age, so that's from 25 to 54, kind of the meat of our labor force, we see that for women, their labor force participation is noticeably below that for men, and that happens to also coincide with the years when a lot of families have young children. So it's not surprising to some extent that we see, you know, women aren't in the labor force at the same rate during those years, and we can think about how childcare, if they had it, if there were a good option, would some of these women prefer to work some amount?
And one of the striking things in your report was a map showing availability of childcare compared to the number of children who might need it. Can you talk about what you found?
Yeah, so that's just one way to try to understand, you know, where might there be strain in the state in terms of families trying to find childcare. So what we've done is take the total number of childcare establishments, keeping in mind that the large majority of those are these small kind of non-employer childcare providers, so maybe just one person, for example. That makes up about three-quarters of our childcare businesses. But in total, we take those childcare businesses and then compare that to the number of children. And we see that there's a lot of variation across the state. Some places seem to be doing okay. They have, you know, as many as 12 children per child care provider. In other places, it's much higher, closer to 50. And this is, too, just the formal child care providers, just the businesses. I know, of course, that there are a lot of informal child care arrangements happening, too, but I still think this helps us understand where might there be strain, where might families be having a hard time finding child care.
And that chart, that map just shows child care providers, period. It doesn't look at affordability. It doesn't look at quality of that child care, right?
Right. That's just, you know, to some extent, quantity of child care is just kind of getting your foot in the door in terms of how complicated this issue is. Certainly affordability and quality are very important, too.
Now, I know a lot of parents have probably been in this situation at some point where they ask the question, given the costs of childcare, assuming they can find it, given the costs of childcare, is it worth it to work or to work full time, right? Is that something that calculation, something that keeps people out of work?
Of course, I think a lot of families, a lot of parents are doing that math on a regular basis to, you know, does it make sense for me to work? Is my entire paycheck going to be going towards childcare? So, you know, we're finding in Wisconsin, and these are, you know, some relatively, I would say, conservative estimates that it could cost, for example, upwards of $1,000 for one child in childcare and weighing that against what your income is. So some households, for example, you know, it could be easily spending 15-25% of their monthly income on childcare. So, you know, that's, for some people, that might be comparable to what they're spending on housing.
We're talking to Tessa Conroy with UW-Madison and Extension. She has a new report out on childcare, childcare and employment in Wisconsin. And Tessa, are we in a double bind when we're in a tight labor market? We need more people in the workforce, but also we may not be able to hire enough people to provide the childcare.
Yeah, that's a good point. I imagine that childcare is facing kind of the same challenges in terms of finding enough people. So you make a good point that, you know, this is not an easy problem to solve. I think if it were, we'd have an answer already.
you, in your report, look at the benefits not just for parents themselves if they get childcare, but for businesses and communities. Can you talk about that a little?
Right. So I just wanted to highlight that this isn't just about parents. I think that they're a big component when we're talking about childcare, that there are maybe people who want to work some amount and childcare is getting in the way of that. So it's certainly good for workers, but this can also be good for employers. Employers are trying to find workers right now, so this can help them get workers in the door. It can also potentially save them in terms of retention. So if they're not if they're not losing employees, they're not having then to spend on hiring, they're not having to spend on training somebody new. So this can be good for employers in that way. Also presenteeism. So when their workers come to work, if they have good childcare, I think they might be a little bit more focused. Their stress levels are a little bit better. So presenteeism is part of the equation as well. Childcare is also a setting for early childhood development. So this can be good for kids. We've seen some research showing that this is good in terms of their long-term performance at school. This is good in terms of propensity for crime. And ultimately, you know, strong workforce, a strong business sector, having kids doing well, that's all good for community development as well.
So if we have this need for childcare, who does it? Who needs to take the lead on making it happen?
I think that'll be different in every community. What I'm hopeful of is just demonstrating that there are lots of people or lots of parties who have something to gain in finding a solution. So some sort of collaborative effort might make sense in a lot of our communities.
You, in your report, touch on at least a couple communities that have tackled this problem of providing childcare. Can you talk about what you found?
Yeah, so one example in particular, if I'm remembering correctly, Vernon County, they have Organic Valley, they have Vernon Memorial Healthcare, they have a partnership then with Medical College of Wisconsin with some grant support. So what they've done is create shared services so that childcare providers, for example, can all use one bookkeeper so that that's more affordable to have this shared service together. So that helps these childcare businesses be a little bit more sustainable. They've also come together to have some backup plans in the instance that a childcare provider may not be able to provide service for a particular day. There's a backup plan so that parents, for example, can still get to work so that they have a plan B if they need it for their childcare.
Now, here in Wisconsin, we were at the forefront of a welfare to work movement 20 or so years ago, maybe a little more than that. Is the lack of childcare, though, something that can hamper that kind of program, make it more difficult for parents, maybe moms, to get into the workforce if, again, this childcare isn't there?
I think it's true for a lot of families across the board that childcare, not just mothers, but I think more and more we're seeing, you know, kind of gender norms evolve, and that anybody who's in a caretaking role of a child, that's a major concern when they're trying to figure out what is going to be their work situation and how they're going to manage all of their responsibilities. So I certainly think that this is relevant in a number of contexts.
We're talking about a new report on the link between childcare and employment here in Wisconsin. Tessa Conroy is with us. She's the author of that report, an economic development specialist and assistant professor at UW-Madison and Extension. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Has access to high-quality, affordable childcare kept you from working? If you're an employer, has a lack of childcare nearby, kept you from finding the workers you need? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org.
We'll continue this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Darrell Connor. We're talking about how childcare affects the local and state economies with Tessa Conroy. She's an economic development specialist and an assistant professor at UW-Madison and Extension. She's also the author of the new Windicators report called Childcare as an Economic Development Strategy.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. How important is high-quality, affordable childcare to you? Have you been in the situation as a parent where you have to decide, is it worth it to work when you're weighing the costs of childcare or maybe cutting back to part-time or no time? If you're an employer, how big an obstacle is childcare for you? Does it make it difficult to keep employees? Does it hurt presenteeism, as our guest was saying earlier? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Tessa, your report includes charts on women and men and how much they participate in the workplace. And you see, if I'm reading this right, you see women dropping off in those prime years when they're maybe likely to be having kids. If I read it right, at least some of them are not coming back into the workforce. Is this something that affects women's careers all the way down the road?
Yeah, there is some evidence of that, you know, that once they leave, it can be hard to get back in the door, or that the kind of accumulation over time in terms of lost experience ends up hurting their prospects down the road. So it does seem to be the case, you know, kind of up until about 25, women and men are participating in the labor force at about equal rates. But as women kind of, you know, get into time of life when they're potentially child rearing and having kids, having young kids, we do see them leave the labor force and, yes, not come back, even as those kids maybe get older and those same needs aren't as pressing.
Now, your report is about childcare as an economic development strategy, and you talked about what they were doing in Vernon County. Do you think that a local community or maybe group of communities, if they got together some kind of child care system, whether it's public or private or a combo, whatever, that that's something that could lure employers and employees to a community?
I think so. Like I said, I think there's something to be gained for both workers and employers among, you know, alongside kids and communities too. So I think that for workers thinking about kind of how do I juggle my responsibilities at home as well as my responsibilities at work, I think for employers thinking about, you know, I want to locate in a place where I have labor available to me, I think that there's potential for a community to use childcare as a strategy to get both employers and workers, you know, attracted to want to come live there, to want to come put their business there.
When we talk about economic development strategies, a lot of times it's about tax incentives or infrastructure, things like the roads and internet. It might be about the creative community. We hear about that some. Is this childcare issue under the radar?
Maybe a little bit. I think more and more people are talking about it, though, definitely. I do think this is an important piece of placemaking. I do think that with the labor market the way it is, and, you know, during the recession, for example, there was a lot of available workers. Now it's more the case that employers are having to compete for workers. So we're thinking about kind of where do workers want to live? What kind of amenities do they need? What kind of support do they need? What other than wages can we do to attract new workers? So I think childcare, because of that, is, you know, bubbling up as an important issue.
But does that only stay an important issue when we have a tight labor market, when it comes to a time when there's higher unemployment and it's then employees competing to get those jobs from employers? This maybe isn't going to look like such a priority?
I think for families, it's important all the time. But I think this labor market, you know, is creating maybe some circumstances where more people are seeing it.
We are talking to Tessa Conroy from UW-Madison and Extension. She's an assistant professor and an economic development specialist, talking about her new report on child care as an economic development strategy. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Has the availability of childcare or lack of childcare affected you and your job hopes and dreams, or you as an employer? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. To your calls now, Glenn is with us in Heartland. Glenn, hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Glenn?
Well, I think this is a great topic, and you know, it's something that's needed, especially if you want to recruit and hire staff. So our district is moving forward with investigating having a daycare that's primarily to attract new teachers into the district and retain our teachers, because we know that how stressful it can be to be a parent with little ones. So we're in the process of doing that. And it's also another piece to that is, besides having affordable health care, is that when it's something that the employer is involved in, it also builds collegiality among the staff, because your colleagues also have kids in the same daycare, and it makes it more of a community feeling.
And Glenn,
it's also available to the community as well.
And Glenn, what's your position at the school district?
Superintendent.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that story. So there you have it from someone who's got some employment decisions to make, a school district superintendent, Tessa. Is that something, I guess I was thinking about, you know, a government entity or a private business, but, you know, a public entity like a school district might do something like this.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Again, you know, and they're so close to not only having a workforce, but they have a lot of children right there, too, for example. So it makes sense, I think, for this school district to have an active role in solving this problem. So I'm encouraged to hear that solution.
Glenn, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Tessa, we heard what Glenn's district is doing. You talked about Vernon County. It may be that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to this, right?
I would agree with that. I think that every community probably has different stakeholders that are going to want to be part of finding the solution. They might have employers of different sizes who have different, you know, ability to get involved in this issue. I think your local leaders, to what extent, you know, they're seeing this as a community issue, for example. I think all of those factors are going to play into who comes to the table to work on this.
Do you see room for more state investment? Is this something you'd hope to see support for childcare, say, in the state budget we're watching for pretty soon?
I think there's an argument to be made for that because there are these benefits across the table. You know, it's not as though this is only benefiting parents, but because there's a lot of people, there's the employers, the workers, the kids, the communities, that maybe there is an argument for the state to be more involved in supporting child care.
As we wrap up, Tessa, what are you hoping your report accomplishes?
Again, I'm hoping that, you know, people see this kind of multifaceted issue. I know it's not simple, but there are many people who have something to gain by working at it. So I'm hoping to bring more people to the table so that some collaborative and creative solutions can be addressed.
Tessa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Tessa Conroy is an economic development specialist and assistant professor at UW-Madison and Extension. Her new report is called Childcare as an Economic Development Strategy. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a musical poem.
January is National Polka Month, and what better place to commemorate this iconic sound than in Wisconsin, where the polka is our state dance. To celebrate, poet Susan Fearer shares a poem about her sister's accordion and her mother's irritation. It's called 1956, the year my sister, using her ill health once again, blackmailed my parents into an accordion.
My mother even hated the name of the store where she had to pick it up. Lo Duca Brothers. She waited until dark to smuggle it from our old holiday trunk into our house. To my mother, the accordion was an immigrant, one of my father's relatives, one that didn't speak English, one that was pierogi fat that wore a babushka and anklets to church, one she thought she had talked him out of writing to. My sister would go out on my parents' suburban front lawn between the maple and chinaberry tree on the even, green, Bay Ridge, well-watered lawn and practice Lady of Spain. My mother imagined the clouds above her house taking Lawrence Welk cutout shapes at Rankolakis. Frankie Yankovic was at her door. The neighbors knew. My mother hoped my sister would abandon the accordion as quickly as she did her charm school, her twirling, her water ballet, and Mamie Eisenhower scrapbook. My mother dreamt the six fat Dutchmen heard all about her sick daughter and came and taught her the two fat polka. All my father's unrecognized relatives came from Czechoslovakia to see the six fat Dutchmen and do the Slovenian twirl in twilight under plastic electric Chinese lanterns strung around my parents' newly landscaped suburban lot. My mother bribed my sister away from her accordion with a trip to New York to visit Uncle Jack, a professor who taught labor relations at Cornell. It was what my sister wanted all along. The accordion was her wardrobe door to Narnia, New York. While they were gone, The accordion set alone as the night convent of St. Mary of Częstochowa. The accordion had rows of knobs of wonderful black buttons. I wasn't big enough to carry it. It was beauty. I imagined it vast and pearl as a confessional, gay as a polka fest. I sat next to it. I heard my sister's silent accordion stop playing the past. It began playing music I didn't know yet. Years later, I'd call it Zydeco and dance to it on sweet, full summer nights on side city streets of the future with holy card beautiful men who loved nothing more than a woman with an ear for a good accordion and all the musics one can make.
Susan Fearer is the former poet laureate of Milwaukee and the author of many books, including Milwaukee Does Strange Things to People. And if you want more accordion in your life, check out Wisconsin Public Television's recent story, Accordion Is All in the Family. It's about lifelong accordion player Ruth Marty, her bandmate and granddaughter, Sarah, and an annual concert they host in New Glarus. You can find that story at wisconsinlife.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up after the news, our guest says with the Miller Park name on its way out, the Brewer Stadium needs a permanent name that everyone can raise a glass to. We'll talk with him about his idea and ask what you think. I'm Darrell Connor.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. Stick around. There's more to come here on the Ideas Network.